This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 330 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me for the last time before he leaves the country from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
G'day, mate.
How's things?
Well, for the last time this time. Yeah. Like, forever, like saying I've been run out of the country for tax evasion or something. Yeah. They did not find me in the Panama Papers.
That's why you've gone to Cuba, isn't it?
Exactly. I have to roll up a cigar and hide.
Smuggle your millions out of the country.
Millions of yen. Yeah. Millions of dong.
Of baht.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How's your week been?
7 days.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, it's been all right. It's school holidays. So I'm not achieving a great deal of,
right.
of anything, as you well know what they're like.
Yep.
So just been a lot of entertaining, and between that, looking at a few photos from India and trying to get through some of them so they're done before the next trip.
Doing the dreaded daddy daycare.
That's called parenting.
That's right.
Right. Yes, that's a bit of parenting. But yeah, doing some, just planning, just getting stuff organised for other stuff and other trips and so on, and
cool.
Trying to get America organised. Still so. I don't know what I'm going to do.
So when's that? That's next month.
That's May 7 and 8 yeah. is the actual workshops, but I leave on the 24th of April.
When do you get back from Vietnam? 23rd.
The 17th of April. Right. This is good because I get off the plane, go straight to my daughter's birthday party.
Oh, that's right, yes.
So, and then home for a couple of days and then off again. So,
right.
It's good. So, been a good week. So, this week, KL have announced they're going to be the major sponsor for our Zaindabad Lighting Workshop Week.
Oh, nice.
I think so. They're going to promote it and work with Ellen Crom India and all the other suppliers to supply us gear over there without us having to try and bring it from here.
Oh, wow. So, oh, that's good.
So, it's going to make life an awful lot easier.
Yeah.
And especially since it turns out the generators that I have access to over there to run what I was going to run the studio lighting on aren't the right kind of generators.
Oh.
So it turns out they can only run on sine wave, Honda sine wave generators.
Right.
These studio lights. So, yeah, hopefully they'll be able to source those for us and ship those things in. And,
oh, that's interesting.
But yeah, but that's good news to have them on board.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's a matter of now pulling together all the pieces and
now you've got me scared.
Why?
Well, because we're doing our Little Red Riding Hood shoot this Sunday.
That's original.
Yeah, and well, it's original for me. I've not done it before, but I've organised a 2-stroke generator so that I can take my studio heads with me.
Yeah,
and now you've got me worried.
I don't know if that's just the Ellen Crom lights. I imagine it probably is.
Right.
It might be to do with their high speed, yeah, I'm talking about the ELC lights, their high speed lights, which yeah, may need some, I have no idea.
Yeah, like, right.
But when the head here goes, oh, by the way, I hope you've got the right type of generator, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah. So I'm thinking I better take one of my lights to work tomorrow and give it a test because the generator's at work. So.
Yeah, just
to be safe,
to be sure. Yeah, as the option,
at least then if I find out that it doesn't work, I've got a couple of days up my sleeve to organise an alternate plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, a bit of. See, this podcast has been useful for once.
Yeah.
Also, Ellen Crom Australia talked to me this week. They're looking at establishing Ellen Crom Australia ambassadors.
Oh, wow.
And asked me to be one of them.
I was going
to
say a crew of one made up of Glyn Lavender. No.
Well, in Melbourne, there'll be me and some guy called Rocco and Cora.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, so, I don't know, world's top 10 wedding photographer or something. And me. It's kind of bizarre. Yeah. Little old me and world-renowned figures like him. Some things like, yeah. Yeah, we have coffee often. Me and Rocco, we're like that. And over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So that's rather nice. It's means I'll be doing a bit more stuff for them with training and
nice.
Yeah, marketing stuff for them, which is nice.
That's and first dibs on every new product that comes out.
Yeah, and then a new development with one of my other partners, well, several developments, one of them positive, one of them who knows.
Hmm.
Positive one is I can't talk about yet because it's still going to be finalised, but yep. It's looking really good for a big promo towards the end of the year.
Nice.
And then the other one is the people who bring Tamron into Australia have, well, they're being told they're closing up on May the 2nd.
Maxwell Australia.
Yeah, so they're gone.
What?
Gone-gonski after 38 years or something in the Australian photo industry.
So who runs Maxwell Australia?
Well, it's owned by a company called Damon, which is based out of Canada.
Right.
And they've decided to go into a different distribution model.
Oh, okay.
And you guys, and they don't want a marketing model anymore, just a distribution model or some crap like that.
Wow.
So they've got rid of them and putting on someone who's got, you know, no experience in the field whatsoever.
Oh, that'll work.
Well, who's got no connections with the retail channels in photography and all stuff. That's all happening now. And I was talking to just yesterday, I was in the city in Melbourne and saw the Victorian Tamron or Maxwell's rep. And I've known her for 30 years, so I popped to say good day. And I said, so what's going on, Lee? She goes, I've got no idea.
Yeah, right.
My job finishes in 3 weeks. That's all I know. And I've got no idea what's going on.
John Swainston's probably glad he got out when he did.
Well, yeah, I would imagine if he was still there, it probably wouldn't happen. But it's just a sad thing. So that's my Lowy Pro and Tamron, which I'm just not sure. And I haven't got my new 85 1.8 and my new 90mm macro yet. So that's not
that's all he cares about. Oh, dear. All right, what do you got on your list?
Me, nothing.
Oh, okay.
No, I might have something.
We're starting with David Marlin's email.
Yeah, no, I had stuff before that I didn't share, but I think I may have closed down that window, and so far I don't have that at all.
Well, that was the first thing you had on the list of stuff you sent to me.
Yeah, I know, but I had stuff before that I was going to talk about, and it's gone.
And you've forgotten. Okay. David Marlin wrote to us through the week, and he said, "Hi, guys, really liked tonight's episode and Glyn's experience in India. Can I reserve the right to agree and disagree?"
No, you bloody can't.
"When I made the comment on the show that I thought Glyn had done things a bit differently, I found it hard to articulate why, and to a large extent agree with Bruce."
Well, that's because Bruce butted in. I hate people who butt in when someone's talking.
So do
Bruce.
I. That some of the angles and lighting was similar to
what... I'm sure the listeners have a real trouble hearing over it too.
I'm sure they do.
Just get back for you, David. This is my revenge for you, mate.
"That some of the angles and lighting were similar to what Glyn has done before. However, even in the earlier stages of the trip, I think what I saw in the photos was a more conscious, or was it subconscious, attempt to bring in the context of the location and culture to play in the photos that I'd not seen as much of before from Glyn. The relationship of the background to the subject, to me, seems more direct rather than being abstract. Glyn's excitement and reaction to the trip indicates that it certainly affected him, and through the trip, I think he's grown a bit. Indeed, the description... matured greatly. Indeed, the description of the hands photo he gave indicated that. As for wandering the early morning streets to get a feel for the place, oh my God, what were the others on the trip thinking by not having a go at this? I had some great experiences in some back streets of remote desert towns in the Gobi a few years ago, meeting people in the quiet of the morning. It really is the best way to understand people, their culture, and their lives, and through that, respect them. I believe this sort of experience makes you want to, even subconsciously, capture that little bit extra and not be a tourist with a lens looking into a cage. Best regards."
So I would have to agree and disagree.
On which part?
No, simply because it's kind of funny. Right. But he's spot on. There's no point going to a place like India and not including the context.
Yeah.
So definitely your images are going to be more contextually based portraits where that context adds to the image.
Yeah.
So if you've got a guy that you want to photograph and he's in a spot that has no contextual interest whatsoever, it's always going to be an abstract image.
Sure.
If you have a guy in a spot that's a lot more interesting, it's going to be a lot more contextual.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff I do normally around here, let's face it, I'm bored silly of where I am. I'm doing the same stuff over and over. So, you're going to eliminate a lot of the context because it's just, again, the same wall again. Yeah. Or whatever. So absolutely, when you travel, you should definitely be attempting to incorporate the context. And the old adage, there's a couple of things with travel photography is the wide shot, the closest shot, the closest shot.
Yeah. You
know, establishment shot, the mid-ground. So you want to try and cover that.
Yeah.
I tend to fail miserably at the first two and rush in for number three, you know.
Right. The close-up.
Yeah, go straight for the meat and potatoes, yeah. You know. So yeah, definitely you want to stay back. And then there's the other adage of F8 and be there, you know.
Yeah.
Which to me is more about, you know, forget about technology, just get into the shot, get into the event and get involved and your photographs will be better.
Yeah.
More so than this is the setting and just press and aim at stuff and if it's sharp it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree. I'd love to think it all the way through this. The problem is with the images I've been posting, there's no chronological order. So when you say early in the trip.
But does that matter though?
Oh no, I don't give a rat's personally, because I mean I can't sit there and go through a whole day's photos and look at them all and decide which ones to edit. So I'm going to learn this one and over here and pop over here. And yeah. So it's a bit all over the shop as far as that's concerned. But so if you looked at my images in like the first, if you're watching the Facebook feed, first 4 or 5 days, well, they're obviously early in the trip. But later on, they could have come from just about anywhere. And certainly now I'm back, it could be any old day.
Yeah.
Yeah. The image is more important than the timing or the order.
Yeah. So.
Like I've been putting out some Taj Mahal shots this week, and that was early on in the trip,
right?
But I've been posting much much later stuff than that. Even well to the last day of the trip's been up there well before that,
right?
It could also be interest too. I'm not that interested in the Taj Mahal,
yeah.
But going out to the camel herders,
yeah,
camel nomadic camel herders. That's a little bit more interesting as a photographic perspective.
Yeah,
something that's been shot all the time versus something that's not.
Yeah.
But here's an interesting thing about the Taj Mahal shot, and that when we were in Varanasi, we met up with this Chinese tour guide,
right,
who's leading a Chinese photography tour.
Yeah.
And he's not a photographer, he's just a tour guide. And they had like 20 or 30 photographers with a ridiculous amount of gear, all doing who knows what. I couldn't figure out what photos they were taking. But we talked with him, really great guy, really great guy.
Yeah.
And we're hopefully going to do some stuff with him down the track. But then we happened to bump into him in Agra at the Taj Mahal.
Right.
So he's there again, and we're walking out, so we're having a chat. And he goes, oh, look at this, because the Taj Mahal, three of the main minarets were covered in scaffolding.
Oh.
Okay, so three out of the four.
Right.
Covered in full-length scaffolding. And he's looking at it, he's going, oh, how awesome is this? Because they only put the scaffolding up once every 5 years, and we're here to see it.
Nice.
You know, and I thought, that's actually... really that's, good approach.
That's awesome.
It's a really, what, you want exactly the same photo as everyone else, or only people once every 5 years get to the Taj Mahal, And I thought it was just such a refreshing mindset.
That's a great attitude.
We've all pulled up and gone, oh, look at that, And it's like every iconic place I go to in the world, the scaffolding, Yeah, you walk the Great Wall of China, and all you can see is the billboard advertisements for the upcoming Olympics in 2008 or whatever it was. Yeah. It's like, it takes a bit away from it, I mean, all the way up the mountain, there's these bloody billboards. It's like, no. So, but then again, hey, I'm at the Great Wall, they're advertising the Olympics. That's only ever happened once in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different mindset, different shots than anyone else is getting, because they haven't all got that.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. I thought it was a pretty
that's awesome.
A pretty good perspective on things. At least it saves a certain amount of disappointment. Oh, there's the thing I was looking for. Yeah, look at that. So yeah, about the getting up and going out for early walks, it was a bit strange. But on the last night of the desert, the youngest guy of the whole tour, Kyle, his name was, the non-photographer, came up to me and said, oh, what's the plan for tomorrow? I said, oh, we're leaving at this time, blah, 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 blah. He goes, would you get up with me at 5:30 in the morning and go for a walk? We're leaving at 6:30 on the bus on the trek out into the desert to see the flamingos on the lake.
Right.
He goes, would you get up at 5:30? Well, it might have been 7 o'clock we're leaving. Yeah, 5:30 and go for a walk. And I go, why? He goes, I just want to get out. He doesn't take photos. I just want to get out there and see the nighttime and see the village waking up. I said, of course I will. So I'm up at 5:30. We went for this awesome walk. Yeah, completely different feel to the entire place, but we're the only ones to get to see it because we took the effort to get up and do it. But that's photo tours, though, isn't it? Yeah, people don't. Yeah, some people are right into it. Some people, and once again, towards the end of a trip, I'm sure you're getting tired as well. But I get up every single day if I needed to get the shots.
How many of those people that paid to go on your tour are going to go back to that spot ever again in their life?
None.
Exactly.
No, I'm talking about nuns. Nuns.
So you've got to make the most of it while you're there.
Yeah. It's
bugger being tired. You can sleep on the plane on the way home.
I raised that frustrated point a few times. Then I gave up.
Oh, dear.
I've got to tell you a funny thing, though. I'm sure I didn't mention it last week.
Right.
One of the guys on the trip, we won't mention his name as Charles. So right. Just through you and me. Edit that bit out of the podcast.
Yeah.
He was one of Malcolm's customers, my offsider's customers. Right. And so we met
not,
over there.
Not one of yours.
And
heaven forbid.
And he said to Malcolm, like, day one of the trip, he goes, oh, I'll listen to Glenn's podcast. Malcolm goes, yeah, he goes. And then Charles goes, I don't think much of it.
He's welcome to his opinion.
And Malcolm turned around and says, don't worry, I don't think Glenn does either. it was a classic line. It's like, I don't think much of it. Yeah. You know, I would say we are an eclectic taste.
Yes.
Yeah. Or I should say eclectic lack of taste. Or, yeah. Oh, anyway. So that was kind of funny. I thought of that during the week. Oh, I must mention that. So, yeah. So what else have we got? Oh, everything is horrible. Oh, no, do you want to talk about the Sony full frame thing? I thought that was really interesting.
No, I'll leave that and I'll cover that later.
Okay.
Because Adam posted that one as well. And I've not only want to cover that, but there's another story that relates to that that I also want to cover. So move on to everything is horrible.
Everything is horrible. I came across this thing on Petapixel about a series of videos from the 1980s on pro portrait posing tips.
Even the thumbnails look awesome.
They are classic. You know, here's the thing, you know, imagery is timeless. So, you know, theoretically, the classic shots these people are taking should still stand up. No. You need to see these people.
Could the lighting be any worse?
Well, possibly. They could have done it at night, complete blackness and night. Right. Oh, no. Can you get any more flat?
I think four stops underexposed would probably be an improvement.
Well, especially for some of the subjects. But
you do have to, you know, in all fairness, accept that fashion and, you know, tastes and styles have changed a lot.
An awful lot.
But the lighting is just flat.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? Yeah. So it's definitely worth watching because it's funny as all get out. Yeah,
cool.
But that juxtaposed against the next piece.
Okay.
About this guy called Dean Collins, who was a lighting guru in the 70s and 80s. And his on strobus.com have been selling his 6-hour lighting course for $180 for a long time.
Right.
And saying this guy, whilst yes, the fashions may have changed, but it's exactly the opposite of what you're talking about. This guy apparently knew more about lighting than anyone's ever known and is remarkable at explaining how to light stuff.
Oh, wow.
But you can get all of his videos for free on YouTube.
What?
So that I had that $180 with the 6 hours, you can go watch them all on YouTube now.
Wow.
So if you want to look up some light, it's 6 hours. I don't have the time this week, this lifetime to commit to it. But, you know, definitely maybe worth flicking through stuff, through so you see a lighting setup that's interesting and watch that bit and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good.
Cool.
Then I saw this week that Lytro are getting out of cameras.
What?
Yep,
they've only just got in.
Completely changed their method of business.
To what?
Well, they're going to be working with major movie studios with virtual reality.
Oh, really?
Yeah, using Lytro in virtual reality. Look, I've got to tell you, the link I've put up is actually a full big explanation letter from the CEO.
Yeah, right.
And it's fascinating. It's a really good read.
Yeah, right.
Certainly as far as businesses and startups and making tough decisions and how things can change stuff. And yep. I mean, I've always been fascinated by the Lytro technology, but could never see a real
use for it.
a real mass appeal as far as photography is concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people...
It seemed a bit gimmicky, didn't it?
Well, the people who are into photography like to make choices.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they like to choose a shutter speed. They like to choose an aperture. They like to not shoot anything and then choose later.
Yeah.
I think that kind of, yeah, so it might work as a consumer, but it's really interesting. So this guy's been in charge of three major, or this is his third major organization, and both previous ones have had major troubles.
Right.
And he goes through and talks about how the lessons from those have changed how he works, you know?
Right.
So it's a really good read. And it's really interesting because they just raised like $50 million in new capital funding to go on to the next level of third and fourth generations. And halfway through development, or, you know, they spent like a quarter of that or something doing it. The guys just said, nah, we have to make a decision and change direction.
Right.
And what was amazing is he says, in the meeting, I laid out the range of options to our board, including my recommendation that we dramatically cut staff to reduce costs, exit the consumer business, and completely change direction. Right. And he's saying this to the new investors.
Whoa.
He's just put all his money in. And then he goes, the silence that followed my presentation felt like it lasted days.
I'll bet.
And our newest investor from GSV Capital was the first to speak. And he said, we invested in Lytro because we were excited about the potential of light field technology and we believed in the team, not because we wanted to be in the consumer electronics business. If you think you've got a better path, go make it happen.
Nice.
Isn't it amazing that these people have invested serious and they've gone, well, hey, you want to completely change the business from the pitch you gave us? Yeah. Go for it, yeah. So it's really interesting. It's an interesting post. Is an interesting guy. I've never heard of the guy before, but so I love that sort of stuff.
Funny that you should mention that tonight, because as I was riding home from work this afternoon, I was listening to This Week in Tech, which is a tech podcast, and they were talking about a movie that's just opening this week called Hardcore Henry.
Yeah.
And this movie is entirely shot in the first person. Every frame is shot from the perspective of the lead character. So you are...
You never see the character.
You never see the character. You're the... Unless there's a picture of him in a mirror, but you're behind his eyes for the entire movie.
Wow.
Which is going to be very interesting to see. And it's an action movie, so you can imagine it's going to be pretty full on.
Wow.
But, you know, I guess this is just, you know, where media and entertainment is headed. So yeah, so good on them. It seems like a ballsy move, as you say, you know, to have just raised $50 million, you know, venture capital funding and then to flip the coin. That's wow. That's massive.
So it could be great, or it could be just yet another company that just goes belly up.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling, yeah, realistically, if they stayed trying to sell cameras, I don't see how they could have survived realistically the volume of cameras they must have sold.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been
And, who knows. And the last thing I had up there, because I didn't have very much this week, was just some guy who's got like, yeah, he's one of these 500px guys who's got, you know, millions of followers and thousands of followers, millions of views, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
He's put up a bunch of his before and after photos, so what the photo looked like. What the edited photos like, you know, and so this is out there for all us normal photographers who we look at our images in the back of the camera and go, especially in landscapes for me, that's just garbage. And then you go look at their original photos, you go, you know, I could have taken that garbage. That garbage looks like my garbage.
Yeah.
In fact, that garbage is worse than my garbage. Yeah. And then you look at their post-produced photos, thinking, oh, okay, well, you know, he's polishing the proverbial. But it's interesting. I guess it helps a little bit with that I'll never be good enough kind of mentality when you're photographing and you're seeing the images, and your images are flat and lifeless compared to everything you see on the internet.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, your images maybe suck exactly the same as these guys' images suck.
Yeah.
You suck no worse than everybody else. They know more tricks and more skills and learn them.
Yeah.
It's good
to see, you know, someone who's generated that kind of following.
Yeah.
Giving you the peek behind the curtain, as it were.
Exactly. Peek behind the curtain. I like your phraseology, my friend.
Isn't that the phrase that magicians use?
Behind the curtain.
Seeing behind the curtain.
I don't think they let you behind the curtain, do they?
But yeah, no, that's great. I'll have to have a read of that.
Cool.
Looks good.
So what else we got?
All right. So going up to the top of my list, there was a great portfolio of images that I came across through the week, and this was photos where it was like a photo competition and the theme was haunted. And so this post was called "A Photo Collection That May Make You Sleep With The Light On." And some of these are just really spooky and creepy and in a great way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a good collection of images to...
Just having a look. Let me have a quick flick through. Do you know, so far there's only one. Have I shot in there? It looks like shot in that in one of those places.
Really?
Yeah, it's cool. The Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've shot that. There's one down there. It's called a barber chair, but everyone thinks it's the death. The chair. Yeah, right. So I've shot in there. Yeah.
Yep. Nice.
But out of all of them, I'm just having a quick click through to see if there's any of them that actually kind of I find creepy at all. The only one's the first one.
Right.
The one with the hand coming out of the water.
What about the girl with the candle?
Oh, with the face beside her?
Oh, no, that's great.
Too unrealistic.
Of course it's unrealistic, but it's nice and creepy.
Yeah, but if the face, it looks too much like a mask.
Right.
So if it looked a little bit more humanist or, I would have found it. Yeah, it looks like someone's just got like a Halloween mask and put it there. Yeah, it needs to be a little bit more, less.
Okay.
You know what I mean? the one right the way down looks a bit Dali-esque with the...
With the trees and the...
Yeah, weirdly bent tree. Yeah, but I've got to say, of all the ones, that first one is just because, and I think it's not being able to see the face of the person holding the hand.
So right.
You know, if you can see a face, it changes so much about how you read the image.
For sure.
Not being able to see the face makes you put on all sorts of ideas about what she's actually seeing.
Right.
Man.
Now, last week, David Marland suggested, over the last 2 weeks, we had the whole... You know, Adobe announcing the price hikes because of the falling Australian dollar.
Yeah.
Which, if I remember rightly, was the whole thing they got their wrists slapped over only 2 years ago. However, they've said, you know, because of the changing dollar, the price of Creative Cloud for Australian subscribers is going to go up. And for those people who pay by the month, that price hike is going to kick in from next month, May of 2016. For those of us who pay by the year, and my anniversary just came up in the last week or so, I get the current pricing for the next 12 months.
Nice timing.
Yeah, exactly. And I got a letter, an email letter from Adobe the day that it was announced saying, hey, we're giving you the next 12 months at the current price, but in April of 2017, your pricing is going to go up. And so David Marland suggested that maybe it was time that we had a bit more of a discussion about alternatives to Lightroom and Photoshop. I've not had a lot of time to do any research this week. However, I did find a great website called alternative2.net.
Yeah.
And this website, basically you can go and type in the little search bar on the website, type in the name of whatever software you're looking at replacing, and it will, you know, scan the database and bring back all the known alternatives that do the same thing as the piece of software you've entered into their database. So I've got a couple of links which will go in the show notes, David, to alternative2.net, one for Lightroom, one for Photoshop, but obviously once you get to the website, you can search for anything you like. But I'd be keen to hear from anyone else who's using any other product than Lightroom or Photoshop for their respective tasks, because obviously they do different things. And we'd love to make this an ongoing discussion. You know, if anyone happens to try out, you know, a trial piece of software, you know, in the months to come, let us know what you thought of it. What were the strengths? What were the weaknesses? You know. Because I think it's a good discussion to have, because I think there's a few people who are feeling a little bit burned by this whole, price rise because of a falling dollar. It's not like you're shipping physical product. So, but, you know, as I said last week, Adobe aren't in it for the charity, so.
That's it. The thing, I mean, I've got a bit of time for the On One software.
Oh, suite. Yeah.
I find that's, depending on what you want to get out of your post-processing.
Is this a Lightroom or a Photoshop type?
It can be it's a bit of both, plus okay. more.
Right. Plus more.
So it's a full suite of products and can be certainly standalone.
Yep.
But yeah, it's got a lot of stuff going for it that you could certainly do more. You can do more easily, I think, there than you can in Lightroom with some stuff. Lightroom's easier in other areas, but if you're looking for something just to be looking at, that's one. Certainly, I mean, it's going to be hard to go past the Nik software at the moment for free.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially with their main one that I think
Silver
is...
Silver Effects Pro?
No, that's just their black and white program, which is very good. But if you're looking for something to do some more in-depth editing, it's not that one, not that one, not that one, Vivazer.
Oh, okay.
So the Vivazer tool program, I think, is something that if you want to learn how to manipulate different bits of images, as far as, I want to lighten up just that guy's face. Well, on Vivazer, you go click on a little what's called it, they call it U point technology. Basically, you just put a little click on the guy's face,
right,
and adjust the size of the filter. Area,
yep.
the area it's going to be, and then you just can lighten, darken, add contrast, add structure just to that one small zone.
Right,
and you can do hundreds of those across the same image.
Right, so that's very similar to Lightroom.
Not dissimilar, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because it's funny, I had heard of Nik software for years and had never gone and paid for it. And then, of course, when the news came out 2 weeks ago that, Google had decided to release it for free forever, I thought, oh, well, what the heck? Might as well have a look.
And, well, for free, absolutely.
Yeah, what do you got to lose? So, other than a bit of hard disk space.
Yeah.
So I, installed it and got to say, I really do like Silver Effects Pro.
Silver is great, black and white. Yep.
I feel like the majority of the things that you can achieve with Nik software, you could probably achieve with Lightroom on its own. It's just the tools are laid out slightly differently. So some things are, some looks or effects are easier or quicker to get to just simply because of the way the tools are designed and laid out in the interface. But I'm not 100% sure that you couldn't have got there in Lightroom if you spent enough time on it.
You get to anywhere with anything if you spent time on it. that's kind of the thing.
Exactly.
I do like the Nik Define software as well, which is a great noise reduction program. That's included in that suite for free, which is good.
Yep.
And they have two sharpening tools. They have a raw sharpening and an output sharpening tool.
Right.
So if you're not sure how to sharpen, and it analyzes your image and it looks at what's the best optimal. If you're looking to output it either for print or output for web, it'll do optimal sharpening for whichever type of output you're looking for, which is
nice.
Kind of interesting. So they've got it's a suite that's definitely worth looking into, especially because it doesn't cost anything. Yeah. How could you go wrong?
Yeah.
So, and the On One is one I would definitely look at some research. And I haven't had much to do with, but I know a lot of people who swear by Topaz as well.
Oh, okay.
So there's lots of
options out there.
Lots of options, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Adam sent us this link, which Glenn had in his rundown as well, to an article on Petapixel, why Sony's full-frame Pro mirrorless was a fatal mistake.
Yeah.
And the guy who wrote it, who's a fashion photographer based here in Sydney, basically said that there were a few different points that he made. One was, number one was compactness. And essentially his argument here was that the depth that you lose in the physical camera body size by going to a mirrorless design, which is much slimmer than a DSLR body, you then sacrifice because the lenses are bigger anyway. So his argument is that the front to the front element to the viewfinder depth of the whole camera and lens assembly is actually no different whether you're on a mirrorless body or a DSLR.
Or, in fact, it's sometimes worse.
And in some instances, it's even worse, yeah. So that was his first point. His second point was weight. The thing about a big DSLR body is that it tends to at least counterbalance the weight of a big lens, where... What was the... What's the analogy he used?
It's like a bazooka mounted on a matchbox.
That's it. Where was that? Where'd you see that? I was looking for that.
It's on my screen.
That's why I can't see it.
See, I'm looking at the article so no one else can look at it on the internet, but right. I'm looking at it. So.
Right. The next claim was the in-body image stabilization, which I did read and I can't remember the finer points of it. Anyway, so there was all this, you know, all these arguments that he felt were supporting the idea that a 35mm sensor in a mirrorless body was a big mistake on Sony's part. However, in the 24 hours or 48 hours after that particular blog post went viral in photographic circles, out came another story on the SonyAlphaRumors.com website debunking Sator's article about Sony's full-frame pro mirrorless was a fatal mistake. So they've come back with a whole bunch of refutations to his arguments. So something tells me we haven't seen or heard the end of this.
If you're looking at actual physical size, as far as what, if you need to shove something into your camera bag,
yep,
and it's 10 inches long and the other one's 10 inches long, you know, you need the same size bag.
Exactly.
You know, it's the width of the lens is causing most of the. I mean, it doesn't matter if the body's a bit smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I don't get it. And the balance is completely out on these cameras.
The thing about the SonyAlphaRumors.com article, the response to Sator's original post, they made one point, and that was it was in his original article. He talks about how, you know, if the lenses can be smaller with a DSLR body, that's a better way to travel anyway, because most pro photographers are going to take a whole bunch of lenses. And if all the lenses have to be bigger, then you end up losing more space for your mirrorless kit than your DSLR kit, where the lenses are slightly more compact. So anyway, There's a heap of arguments on both sides of the fence there.
But you're very much right about the if you're carrying five lenses, and all five of those lenses have to be much bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Sony guys came back and said, well, you know, that's not a valid argument because of X, Y, and Z. So, like I said, I'm sure this will be going on for years to come. Anyway, so there we go. The next one I saw, that Adam saw, was on DIYphotography.net. And this was the guy who was shooting Red Bull aeroplanes. They do the air race stuff. And he wanted to light these aeroplanes with flash, you know, speed lights.
Yeah.
Whilst they were in the air. So what he did was he convinced the pilots to put flash guns or speed lights in the rear seat of their planes, obviously with wireless triggers. The photographer was in the third plane and he had planes one and two fly inverted above each other so that when he took the shot, the flashes fired in both of those planes and lit the other plane. That's amazing. Some imaginative thinking.
That's very cool.
That is awesome. I don't think I ever would have considered doing something like that, but it's a great shot, and you can see how well it worked in the blog post. Very cool.
Very cool.
Then we heard from Grant Palmer with one of the many April Fool's pranks that graced the web on the 1st of April. This was on Photo District News. New Lightroom mode turns any image into an Ansel Adams masterpiece. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say about that.
Yeah.
Steve Peters sent us a great one to the wall on Facebook, and this was on Petapixel as well. Are some photographers too grumpy? And this was all about...
We are not.
And there were some comments from Trey Radcliffe. Have you noticed there are quite a few photographers that take themselves quite seriously? I don't really hang out with a lot of other photographers, but I was thinking about this in Venice when I was walking around St. Mark's Square and random photographers were everywhere. So many of them were so serious, walking around and scowling, getting that shot. Such a funny thing to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway. But apparently even psychologists have noticed that this is the case, that photographers tend to take it all a little bit too seriously sometimes.
Really?
And I sometimes wonder, is part of that just our insecurity? Like, we see other photographers doing great work. You know, they post the one killer image of the 500 images that they took, and we think that that's the standard of all of their work. And so we're very harsh on ourselves, and that gives us a short temper when we don't get the shot we want straight away. That was my initial thought when I saw that. What are your thoughts, Glenn?
I probably don't have any.
Right. Too much effort to think about
but,
it.
But yeah, a simple solution, and it's one I aspire to and work very hard at, stop looking at other people's photos.
Yes.
You won't feel bad.
Yeah.
Stop looking at the internet.
Yeah. Just look at Facebook instead of 500px. You'll feel a whole lot better. Rob Coates wrote to us through the week and said, just listened to EP 329. By far the most enjoyable episode in the 3 or 4 years I've been listening. Clearly he only listened to the last half hour after Glenn logged off.
Yeah.
But yeah, really enjoyed the heartfelt comments from Glenn about the India trip and would like to hear more of both Glenn's and Bruce's photographic philosophy.
Also appreciate... That was it.
Also appreciated being able to view the shots as Glenn commented on them. Well done, Bruce. Regards, Rob from Perth.
Why well done, Bruce?
Because I put the images on the blog post.
Oh, you're so clever.
Apparently.
I cut and paste. It
What are you having a look at?
I'm actually reading what he's saying. I didn't listen to you. We should do that. We can do that. We should talk. Now, we've tried to a few times. We've tried very hard to get people to send us some images to talk about.
Mm.
And, yeah, you know, it's easier to be objective and talk about your philosophy of your imagery, I think, when you're looking at other people's images, possibly. I don't know. I'm not saying I've done a lot of. Than about your own.
Yep.
Yeah, we are all over-hypercritical about our own photography. And I said I was talking to the head of the importers of Alencron the other day here, and he goes, oh, it looks like you had a great time in India. I said, yeah, I've got half a dozen good images. He goes, no, I've seen this stuff on Facebook. You've got stacks. I said, no, probably got half a dozen good images that we like as the photographer, as opposed to just the low-hanging fruit that the rest of the stuff is, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's maybe it's a little bit hard sometimes to talk about your philosophy of the image, but I'm happy to talk about the image.
Yep.
Because I don't have a philosophy about photography.
No, I'd be hard-pressed to come up with something.
But I can certainly tell you everything about the image I shot and why.
Yeah.
You know, why that image works or doesn't work for me, or where I went wrong with an image, where, after thought, you see something goes, oh, you should have thought of this, you could have done that. You're happy to talk about that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Because that's a fascinating process to go through images, because almost everything that – and if I'm not teaching, if I'm just shooting, it's all subconscious.
Yeah.
And it's only when I'm teaching do I manage to dredge some of it out of the subconscious, and even then, not all of it.
Yeah, and put it into words.
Into words, because you have to explain what you're doing, why you're doing it, but you still miss lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Or lots of subtleties that you can sometimes only see afterwards. So that could be, maybe we could do an image a week.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for that. There are things you do when you shoot for yourself that you don't even realize, and it's only when you try and vocalize it and explain it to someone else that you sometimes even become aware of the fact that you're doing it yourself.
Yeah.
I've known that both in photographic land and in audio land, you know, where I've gone to explain something to someone and gone, yeah, you know what, I'd never really considered that. It's something I've done, but I'd never really considered it until I tried to explain it to someone.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, we managed, while you were in India, to get 3 listeners to this podcast and 1 non-listener to the podcast to come on as guests.
Hit a non-listener.
We did. I reached out to him because I've been following his work for a couple of years. That was Richard Bartlett. And I reached out to him. He didn't even know about the podcast.
Well, outside of the seven, who does?
So I figure, hey, if people were brave enough to put their voices on the line, why not, you know, if anyone would like to send us three images.
We've asked this before.
Well, I'm asking again. I'm just asking for someone, anyone. I don't care who. I don't care if all seven of them send us three images. But pick three images that you would be happy for Glyn to pick apart and ridicule, as he will do. And that we will. Hey,
you make me sound heartless.
Is that all?
You know, I came across this one just as a quick diversion.
Yeah.
Signs of a sociopath.
Right.
Superficial charm. Tick. Untruthful and manipulative. Tick. Egocentric. Tick. Devoid of remorse or empathy. Tick. Seeks to dominate and win at all costs. Tick. Never apologizes. I'm sorry. I don't believe that one, but tick. Presents themselves as a hero with high morals and philosophy. Tick. Incites emotional chaos. Tick. Feigns like or love to get what they want. Tick. And as the last one, expert storytellers. So that one's not great. So, obviously, I'm not a sociopath because the last one fell over. But the rest of it.
Got it in the bag.
But yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. Let's get some images. And having said that, because it was obviously something that people liked last week, I'm just gonna
keep doing it.
I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna send you three now. I just grabbed them off Facebook.
Send them via email. Don't try sending them via Skype.
Let's see what happens.
Skype fails.
No, but this is downloaded from what's it called? Facebook. So they're going to be really small files. Yeah, it's one photo.
Oh dear!
See what happens. Image transfer completed. It says here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes, I saw this image. This is your silhouette of the boy standing on the back of a camel or a horse or something.
Horse. Yeah. See, that's the problem with the photo. So you can't tell if it's a camel or a horse straight away. That's it's a problem that really irritates the crap out of me too. I've got to say.
Yep.
The third one that comes to number three.
Yep. Number two and number three. Oh, I'm glad you sent the third one because I saw that image and I was thinking earlier on in this podcast where you were talking about context, where this is to me, a deliberate use of the background as context.
Yes, absolutely.
Within the portrait.
Even the foreground and background. I actually cropped that image to get rid of some of the foreground in one of the shots.
Right.
And it just wasn't right. So I went back and had to redo. Right. It just wasn't working for me as a thing. But if I can find it. Because you know the ring shot we had from last week.
The ring?
The ring shot that Nick Rains had the same.
Okay, the hands, yes.
Yeah, the hands. Yep. Well, it's the same guy. Same guy.
Right.
Here's the thing, though. I'm pretty sure, I'm just trying to get onto Nick Rains' page now, that he's got the same guy.
No.
In a variation pose.
Looking down the corridor.
Yeah.
Past all the pillars.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But it's certainly different, but I thought that I'm going to try and...
He's your brother from another mother, isn't he? I'm going
to try and steal that photo of him as well, if I can. There's that one. Did I photograph that guy as well? No, maybe not. Looks like him, though. There we go. This is the better shot of the guy.
Right.
Oh, no, it's a different guy. First time I've looked it up close. It's a different guy, but it's exactly the same spot.
Yeah, right.
So I'll steal that photo of his Facebook. So this last one is not my image.
Right.
This is Nick Rains' image.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the same location. I mean, the guy's a little bit more central, but it's the same location, just a different guy. It's like, this is so funny. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So we're in the same spots and, yeah.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
Kind of funny stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
So image number one, the boy on the horseback.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy.
For what reason?
In its failure as an image.
Right.
Okay. So obviously, what I'm trying to do is this kid standing on the back of this horse on the
in the desert.
Well, it's actually on the riverbanks of the Ganges. Opposite the main Ghats of Varanasi.
Right.
So we've seen him come running, riding up to the horse, and he's got up and stood up. So I've run and slid down, so I'm in the shadow of the horse to get the kid's head behind there, and I cannot get the damn horse into a position that works, and because the horse is moving around,
yeah,
that really shows it as a really good profile of the animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like so much about the image, except I hate the horse. You know, I'd turn it into glue if I could.
You know what they say, never work with children and animals.
But I mean, there's lots of challenges. The reason I brought that image up is the problems when you have no control over a situation, so you can't get the animal looking the way you want. But also stuff like, well, how do you make that image dynamic? Because a few other people were there shooting it, and their images are dull and uninteresting.
Right.
It's because, well, yeah, they're shooting from their perspective, standing up.
Yep.
Rather than me laying on the sand.
Yeah.
You know? They're shooting without the shadow.
Yeah.
That shadow of the horse leading towards me is such a powerful part of the image.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's a leading line that draws you straight to that point and then upwards through the horse. And without that, if you're shooting from further to the right or left, it just doesn't work as an image. It's strengthened by that. There's probably, given the choice, I would have had less sky. I would have made the subject and the rider a bit more dominant, but I couldn't because of the width of the lens.
The angle of the sun.
And the angle of the sun, exactly. Yeah. So the width of the lens I had on, the moments you have to shoot it, and trying to get the person into that position. I struggle with the image, but you know, you get the image you can get.
Yeah, yeah. An image, even if it's not perfect, is better than no image at all.
Exactly. So I like the photo because once again, it reminds you of a moment.
Yep.
Reminds you of an experience you were having, the place you were at, the smells, the sounds. So that's all good. But, yeah, that image is never going to be anything other than a Facebook pic. Or maybe if I put together a photo book from this trip, it'll be an image, a small image in that. But it doesn't work as an image outside of that. It's not that's a great image, you know. The next image is just this little boy. I've just quickly grabbed three images just for the sake of talking about them.
Yep.
So a little boy standing in a little bit of light and some shadow on some pillars in a building.
Yep.
And once again, to me, it's not about the lines, it's not about the light, it's about the story. So there's a couple of things going in that make this photo work for me.
Right.
Thing number one is where he's looking.
Yep, out of the frame.
Yeah, he's transfixed at something outside of frame. So it draws your mind to think, well, what's he looking at?
Yep.
But it's strengthened by his leg that's up in the air.
Right.
To me, that leg being up in the air adds attention to the body or delight to the body.
Yep.
That makes what he's looking at more interesting.
Yeah.
If you're standing with both feet down the ground, he's just looking.
Yeah.
Now he's urging and surging and wanting to find and wanting to. My brain tells me there's a very different energy going on.
Yeah, sure.
So of the three or four shots I've got of this kid, that's the one I choose because it's that foot that makes the difference. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, if we're just analyzing our shots. And then did I send you the one of the lady with the cows, the bullocks?
No.
Oh, so I meant to send that one too. Let me – that's actually the main one. Once again, to me, a good travel photography is for yourself first.
Yeah.
Or it should be for yourself first. So, yeah, once again, so it reminds you of these moments of this time or whatever. So when this one comes through, there's this lady with these two bullocks. And she's looking at me with this sort of incredulous sort of look on her face. Now, we're in a place where not many Westerners go, so straight away that's going to be a fair reason. But it's the bloody cows, the bullocks. The one on the back's looking at me going, that. The one on the front's kind of freaking out going, what is that? What's that? Yeah, the little one, even less sure, you know. There's a synergy between the three eyes and the three expressions.
Yeah, right.
That kind of and because the bullock at the back, his leading line is coming to the middle of the frame from the top of the frame or from the back of the frame.
Yeah.
The small one's leading in from the right hand side, and she's with her shadow leading in from the left. So they're all coming to this one point.
Yeah.
And this is one point. There's these three faces going, what the? Yeah. And I love that. Yeah. It's such a silly, funny little photo.
Yeah.
But it's that I was looking at this thing for tonight's podcast. It was about street photography.
Yeah. Okay.
And this guy is an architect landscape guy who's trying to get into street photography to change things up. And I'm looking at his photos and I'm like, oh, it's just horrendous, you know? and he goes, oh, I like to choose a background first and then wait for someone to come to it. And then looking at his backgrounds and going, but I don't get the background. Yeah. And it's not the fact that, I mean, the point is, it's his street photography was of someone walking down the street.
Right.
But that's all they're doing is walking down the street. Why is that interesting?
Yeah.
Or it's two people walking past a building. You know, well, that's just two people walking past a building. That's not a story.
No.
You know, look at the iconic street photos that if you go to and look at the best of the best, and they're all this tension, there's drama, there's interest, there's story, there's stuff going on.
Yeah.
Street photography is not the photographs of people in the street.
No.
Or walking on the street. It's a moment when three expressions come together.
Yeah.
And make it ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know? Make it interesting because of that, you know. I'll send this last one through just for sheer fun.
Right.
So whilst we're out with the nomadic camel tribe.
Yeah.
Once again, what's the chance of ever doing this again in your lifetime for the people we're with? After about half an hour or so, they're all back in the truck waiting to go. All just sitting down in the truck having a drink. And me and Malcolm are out there going, what the hell's going on? Yeah, we're out there shooting. And whilst we're out there, this woman comes past. This new woman comes into the camp with a red sari on and pulling three camels.
Right.
But we're there for. But we finally figure we better go because everyone's waiting. So we start walking back and I see all this camel hair on the ground. So we pick him on, put him on his fake beard. So it's a bit of a silly behind the scenes shots of us being idiots, which is nothing. but to me, it would be nice to pull out images that, you know, if people said to me, well, what makes the image tick? What makes it work? What's the magic in this shot? And it can't be, oh, isn't that a pretty landscape?
Mm-hmm.
As pretty as it might be, but what elements are happening in that landscape that elevates it beyond yet another photo of a possibly iconic landscape?
Okay, well, hang on a sec. If we can get some listeners to actually send some images, do we want the listeners to write some text about what it is that made them shoot that, or are we just asking for the images and you're going to critique them?
Well, how about I would say let's get them to tell us why they think what they love about the image.
Yep.
But
or hate about the image.
But or what do you think about the image?
Yeah.
But we won't read that until I've looked at it.
Okay, that sounds reasonable.
I'll look at the image without any preconceived notion. Give my, for what it's worth, and I don't necessarily think it's worth an awful lot, but for what it's worth, my 2 cents worth, and then we'll compare that to what their thought process were, and that could be quite an interesting little thing.
Yeah. All right, so we're putting it out there, people. Any of you who want to take part in this, just pick three images that you either love or hate or are indifferent about, and send them to theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com, and we will not only discuss them, but we'll put them in the show notes so everyone can see the images that we are talking about. And we'll see if we can get this happening on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think Rob Coates should be the first one to send through.
Right. Johnny on the spot from Perth.
There you go. Your bloody idea, my friend.
That'll learn him.
That'll learn him. So what else we got?
That's it, matey. That's it.
We're not too bad on time.
So. All done. All right. Well, you enjoy Vietnam.
Yes. So we probably won't. Let's try and get at least a short recording in the week of like the 22nd-ish, that week, 2021, whatever date it is. I think it might be 2021. So do a bit of a record for that weekend.
Oh, so that's only 2 weeks away.
Yeah, so I'm off to Vietnam. I think I'm only there for like 10 days. But I'm only back for like 5 days and then gone for 3 weeks. So if we can slip one in there.
Right. Well, that week I would prefer the Tuesday, which is the 19th. Is that doable or not?
My daughter's birthday.
Oh, and it's Malcolm's birthday.
It is Malcolm's birthday.
Yeah, okay. Or the Wednesday.
The Wednesday probably would work better.
The 20th. Okay. Sounds like a plan.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Cool. So when do you fly out this weekend?
Oh,
10th?
I've got to go to a workshop and go to the airport.
Right. Oh, so you're flying out Saturday?
No, I'm doing workshop Friday.
Oh, and flying
out after that.
Oh, right. Okay. All right, mate. Well, you guys have a great trip.
Thanks, mate.
And we'll look forward to hearing you when you get back.
Well, hopefully, like I said, I'll be once again posting wherever possible online during the trip. So if anyone wants to keep in touch and stuff, but yeah, it's gonna be a blast. We've got a couple of locations which just look remarkable, and I'm desperately hanging out to get there.
Nice.
So it's gonna be awesome.
Beautiful.
But I'll miss you all.
No, you won't. All right, mate. Have a good one. We'll talk to you when you get back.
No worries. Bye. Take care, guys. Bye.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTier.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.